Well, welcome to the Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast, hosted by the BYU Management Society Salt Lake Chapter. I'm Dave Austin.
And I'm Kurt Frankum.
And I'm Jim Farrell.
And we are so excited. Each week we have the distinct privilege to speak with someone who's a voice of light to uplift others during this difficult time. And this week we have the amazing opportunity to speak with someone who needs no introduction, Donny Osmond. Donny, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
It's my pleasure. How are you guys today?
We're doing great. Donny, I have to say, I saw on social media recently, and I just wonder, what was it like at Trader Joe's when that woman was singing from the Osmond Family Christmas album? And what's it like anytime something like that happens?
You know, it's funny. I got so much traction on that one post. But it was kind of fun. I should have turned around and introduced myself. I was just enjoying the moment when she was singing a song from the Osmond Family Christmas album that was on the speakers in Trader Joe's. And I was just loving the moment. And I should have just introduced but I didn't want to embarrass her because she was singing to the top of her voice, but I almost turned around and started singing harmonies with her.
Donny, tell us, how is life going for you throughout this pandemic, and what are you hopeful for, if anything, in the future?
Well, with the advent of these new vaccines, I'm hopeful that things are going to get back to normal, just like everyone else hopes. And I'm not a scientist, I'm not a doctor, but my gut feeling tells me that whether people want to take it or not, eventually this thing is going to go away. Optimism is going to be infused into the world, let alone our country. And I think we're going to start seeing some real good results around springtime. And so my timing for going to Las Vegas in August is perfect because, in my opinion, Las Vegas is going to be on fire with enthusiasm come summer because everybody's just so sick and tired of being quarantined. They want any kind of entertainment, sports, singing, you know, concert, whatever it might be. So, but here's the positive side, because I like to remain in an optimistic world. The positive side for me this past year of 2020 is it's enabled me to focus on my show, upcoming show, but most importantly, my 63rd album that I'm just about ready to release. I've written the whole thing. It's all original material, and I can hardly wait to release it because I guess I shouldn't disclose this title, but I'm going to do anyway. So awesome. Everybody knows Justin Bieber's song Lonely. And if anybody knows what Justin has gone through or is going through, it's me, because I've gone through the same things. I remember after a concert in Hawaii, just crawling up into a ball in a corner of my hotel room and just bawling my eyes out. Mm-hmm. But here's a kid. I was probably 14, 15 at the time. And thousands of young girls are screaming my name, right? And they want to get to me. And the concert was just on fire. It was just amazing, the enthusiasm and excitement. But an hour later, I'm in my hotel room crying from loneliness. So, and the reason I tell you that is I completely understand where Justin is. And I'm glad he's married. I'm hoping that he can enjoy the same things I'm enjoying now, children and now grandchildren, and getting his life and his act together. But I wrote this song called Life After Loneliness. And it could be the first single off the album. It's not a ballad. It's more of a, it's kind of a rock and driving song. But that's just like one example of some of the songs that I'm coming out with. There's another song that I wrote with some of the guys that are in the circles of Bruno Mars. And I mean, it's just, I think I'm going to close the show in Vegas with this one particular song. Anyway, long answer to your question, the coronavirus has enabled me to focus on those two main things, let alone my family. I mean, that's number one, but from a career point of view, I've really been able to focus on the next phase of my career.
Yeah. So Donny, speaking of loneliness, obviously you've been through a lot of stages in your career and I think a lot of people right now during shutdowns or quarantines are feeling a new level of loneliness themselves. So how have you sort of figured out how to make connection even with the fame where people think, oh, of course he's not lonely, right? Is there anything you've learned over those years that have helped you avoid that dark loneliness?
I'm susceptible to the same things everyone else is. You know, they may think, oh, you're a celebrity, you're on a platform, you're immune to loneliness. And that's not the case. But what I've found, I'm so fortunate. I have a very strong marriage to a woman that I've been married to for I'm coming on 43 years. And they said it would never last, right? But what I've found is that when you forget yourself and you serve others, then you can really bring into your life true joy and true happiness. I'm not going to give you the details of this because I don't like to alms before men, as they say in the scriptures. But there's these, there's a little kid that he's 11 years old, and he has loved Donny Osmond, and he sings his songs, all kinds of stuff, since he was 3 years old. And all he wants to do is meet me and get a signed autograph picture. So I just put a picture in the mail to him, and I worked it out with his mom where I'm going to surprise him right after Christmas, show up at his house and just talk to him.
Oh, wow.
I don't want any publicity out of it, nothing like that, because what it does is it gives you such internal happiness and joy when you give to others without wanting anything back in return. Mm. And that's what's great about this season of Christmas, is that it enables us to really have internal joy by giving and not waiting for something to be given to us. Mm. So it's all about giving and being grateful for what you have and what you don't have.
Mm. Yeah. Those are great points. You know, I wish we had 2 hours. I've got a million questions.
Go for it. Let's start.
One, as I've watched you over the years, Donny, one of the things that I think sets you apart is your ability to connect with people.
Yeah.
On the stage. It's not, there are a lot of talented people in the world.
I'm sorry. What was your name again?
Jim Farrell. Yeah. Thank you. You were?
You know I'm kidding. I'm Michael Jackson.
You look a lot like him.
Exactly.
this ability to marry your talent with this ability to connect with people, Kurt raised that in his prior question, this issue of connection. I'm wondering if you were teaching a masterclass on connection, because that's, to me, that's a really important topic, not just for people on stage, but for life generally. I mean, connecting with your spouse or with a child, the one you were just talking about. If you happen to be on a stage, if you're teaching a class, having a real human connection, if you were teaching a master class on that, first of all, I would take it. Second of all, would there be three or so points that you would say, you know what, these for me are bedrock. If you're really going to connect, you're not only going to be talented, but you're going to be connected to people in a way that's moving and matters. These are the things that have to happen.
What you just asked is one of the most vital things in life itself, and that is communication. It applies to a marriage. It applies to raising children. It applies to just our community in general. Mm. And one of the problems that I see going on right now is selfishness. It's all about the me generation. And, you know, we blame the millennials or the Z generation, whatever we want to call it. No. It's everybody's problem. And it's sometimes contagious from another generation to another generation. It's all about, what can you do for me? It's a great song by Janet Jackson. What have you done for me lately? Ooh, you know that song?
Yeah.
It's just so true. What have you done for me lately?
Mm.
Well, it doesn't matter, really. What can I do for you? Mm. And, in this masterclass, I would probably start out with some funny stories. I would start telling them about who I am and the real Donny Osmond, not the facade, not the show business. Mm-hmm. So immediately you break the fourth wall. Mm-hmm. That's what I try to do in my concerts. Yes, you know, people want to see you entertained. They want to see a star on stage. But then throughout the show, you break the fourth wall and you talk to them. I want the audience to feel like they're a part of the show. They're part of my life. And Stephen Pimlott, sorry, I'm going all over the place. This is just way my brain works. It goes so fast. But when I did Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, Stephen Pimlott was the director, the late Stephen Pimlott, great Shakespearean director. And he told me two things that changed my whole perception of show business. And it has to do with communication, because that's what you do on stage, is you communicate. And a lot of entertainers think it's a one-way street. I'm singing to you. No. You're also going to give back to me. So first thing he said was, the theater is a place where people come to dream in public and you're in charge of the dream. So that really puts a whole different perspective on what I do on stage. It's a huge responsibility. Yeah. If I want to take them on a ride, it's my job. And speaking of job, that's the second thing he said. He said, it's not your job to get on stage and entertain. It's not your job at all. All you have to do is have a great time on stage and enjoy your world and allow people to peek into that world. They will then have a great time. But it's important to get out of your world and be in theirs. That's the first thing I do in the masterclass. The second thing I would do is I would do something that I learned on the Donnie and Marie talk show. We had some amazing guests, Merv Griffin, who was like one of the master talk show hosts. And one of the things I learned from all these people is that you listen. It's funny because I asked Merv, I said, what makes a great talk show host? And he says, you got to listen to your guests. And I said, I'm sorry, what did you say? Because if you listen, not just to listen to placate them, but to listen and jump into their world.
Yeah.
Now, your listener is just as important as the teacher. The student is as important as the teacher. And that's the second thing I would do in that masterclass, is to make them feel like they're important. And I learned that as a father. And my first two children, I've had some great talks with them. They one time said, I won't tell you exactly what they said to me, but they just said, sit down and listen to me. Because I was trying to be the father. And I said, you know, you listen to me. I'm the authoritative one here.
Yeah.
But I then realized, because of my first two children, and I did it differently for the next three, and I'll always be grateful for Don and Jeremy, my first two children, for teaching me this. You just got to listen. Every child you have, every friend you have, the spouse you have, they have a voice. And that voice is very, very important to listen to. They have to feel validated. And that's the problem in our society when there's a selfishness, is that people don't feel validated. They don't feel heard. I'm a very religious person. I don't get up and I don't preach, because I don't think entertainers should preach and shove things down people's throats. If they're interested, I'll talk to them about it. But as a member of the LDS Church, I honestly believe that when I kneel down to pray, it's a two-way street. Because I know I'm being heard. Well, if that principle is so important between my God, my Heavenly Father, and myself, then it's got to be important to everybody I talk to. Third, I don't know. There's got to be something to come. I don't know, but those are the first two things.
You just sing a song. That's right.
Sing a song. But those are the first two things I do in my masterclass, is that communication is vitally important. Making feel people comfortable in your presence.
Yeah.
That's so awesome. You know, to that point of in your LDS faith, Donnie, I watched you on Dancing with the Stars. I don't typically watch Dancing with the Stars, but I watched every single episode, and I was so excited when you won. And I'm just curious, how is it that you can be a good member of the church like you are and also still be a part of Hollywood? How is that, and how has that been over the years?
It's a great question, and it's a very simple answer. It's a choice. We all have choices. You know, nobody's holding a gun to our head saying, you got to do this and you got to do that. And if I believe in my faith, then believe it. You know, if you know that it's true and you honestly believe it's true, then follow it. I don't want to be a boat without an oar. I don't want to be, you know, just flailing in the wind. I want direction in my life. When I was 16 years old, I looked in the mirror. And I said, you are the biggest hypocrite that ever existed. Because I was in all the fan magazines, all those teen magazines. And somebody said I hold the record for being on the cover of 16 magazine or Tiger Beat. I don't know if that's true or not, but somebody told me that. But they would always ask about my personal life. And I'd say, yes, I'm a member of the LDS Church and I'm what you call a Mormon. But and I believe it's true. And guys, I never read the Book of Mormon. I never really had a testimony. I just followed what my parents said and what my family did. And I thought, man, I got to get my act together because I'm just a puppet. I'm a puppet on a string. You know, I'll just do whatever you ask me to do. I'll be a chameleon. Mm-hmm. And then eventually I started, and it had to do with that time I crawled up in a corner and started crying after a concert, being lonely, just very lonely because who am I? Wrote a song years ago called Faces in the Mirror. Faces in the mirror, looking back at me. Am I getting nearer to where I want to be? I mean, it was really kind of a funky song, but the content was like, who am I looking at? Who am I right now? Because I have to wear so many different hats based upon what everybody wants me to be. So I said, all right, if I'm going to be a Mormon, read the Book of Mormon. So I put it to the test. And I mean, I don't want to get too religious here because, you know, there may be some people listening right now who just enjoy their faith. And that's great. I love that. But I put it to the test. I read it from cover to cover. I won't tell you exactly what happened. I didn't hear thunder and see angels and God talk. No, I had none of that. I had the most peaceful feeling. And that gave me my testimony and kept me going and wanting to keep going to learn more and more and more. And that's what's grounded me in my life in this crazy world of show business. Because as I said at the beginning of your question or beginning of my answer, it's a choice. If you want to take, if you want to derail yourself, you can't blame anybody else but yourself. If you want to stay on the tracks, it's up to you. And you have to make that choice.
Love that. And with those choices, I'm curious, over time, do people sort of figure out where you stand? And so those choices become easier to make because people aren't pushing you in one direction or the other. Has it gotten easier over the years to make those choices?
You know, that's an interesting thing that pops in my mind is that so many times, and this is during the time I was really trying hard to change my image. It was 1989 when Soldier of Love came out. I went over to England, started recording with Peter Gabriel and wearing leather jackets and torn jeans and, you know, stubble on my face. And I would make a comment here and there. And every once in a while, a fan would come up to me and say, Donny Osmond wouldn't say that. And I said, well, Donny Osmond just did. So everybody knows my standards, and it's kind of been very helpful to me because it's kept me on the straight and narrow because I realize a lot of people are watching me. I was at the Montreux Music Festival in Switzerland, and I was the act following Public Enemy. And I can't remember who followed me, but it was just like these real hardcore rock and rollers, whatever, you know, and the place was just as smoky as you can imagine. Everybody's drinking and it's going live on television. And I was there to promote my record. So my manager at the time, he saw that it was really hot in the green room. I was watching the television monitor. I had my leather jacket on. I'm kind of perspiring. So he said, I'm going to get something cold to drink for you. So he comes back with these two cold mugs of beer. And I'm really ice cold, right? And I'm watching the monitor. He hands me one. I know what's in my hand. And I could see him out of my peripheral vision. He's just like, what's he going to do? And I put it up to my lips. And I was just about to drink it. And I put it down and I looked at him. And he's like, oh, my goodness, you almost drank it. I said, Jed, what would you have done if I drank that? And then his response, I'll never forget. I thought he'd laugh it off, come up with kind of a joke or something. He said, I would never have forgiven myself because I was the one that made you compromise your principles.
Wow.
So in a way, it's really, really nice for people out there in the world at large to know who I am and what I stand for. And I've never compromised.
That's amazing.
It goes back to the last question. It's a choice. You know, you either partake of things or you don't. You either stick with your standards or you don't.
Yeah, I have two questions coming out on for you. I don't know if they're related or not. They're probably not. But one is, you've been all that you've done, you're known so widely and you've been adored over the years. I mean, through decades. So, and I have a friend who told me, he says he was a judge for decades. And he says, it's a heady thing. Every time you walk in a room, everyone stands up and calls you Your Honor.
Yeah.
That can do crazy things to you. I've wondered what does adoration, what is there a trap that you've had to deal with around adoration? That's part one. Part two is this. Over these years, I've watched you, in a way, reinvent yourself over and over and over into all of these different kinds of venues and places and different parts of the entertainment industry. And we're in a time right now when a lot of people are reinventing themselves. People are out of work. They're figuring out what they're going to do next. How have you dealt with that over the years? And do you, as part of that, you're just coming out with your 63rd album. Do you ever wonder, am I going to be able to do it as well this time as I did that last? I mean, do your past successes haunt you in any kind of a way? Do they drive you? Do they worry you? I mean, that whole territory is fascinating to me.
So many things go right. Let's go back to the first point you made is how do you deal with the adoration?
Yeah.
It's an interesting dynamic, isn't it? When you're adored by people and it can do strange things to your head, as you've seen in show business or any kind of business, whether it be a judge or anybody in power, you can actually go crazy and lose perspective. Mm-hmm. I'll always be grateful to my parents who helped me keep my feet on the ground. I'll always be grateful for my belief system that has kept my feet on the ground. And I'll always be grateful for my wife every week when she says, take out the garbage. So, because you got to do the real things in life and you can't surround yourself with yes people. Mm. And as hard as it may be, I mow my own grass. I have some people help me, but I mow my own grass. I do my own yard work. I take out the garbage. I do all those normal things. Mm. Because when you go to Vegas and you walk on stage, or you get a standing ovation. That's adoration.
Yeah.
You don't say to them, oh, sit down. I don't deserve this. Oh, please stop. No, you're grateful. You accept it because I just gave my heart and soul on stage. I left it all on stage, no matter what I was doing. Mm. And they reciprocated. Be grateful. Mm. Be thankful. Mm. And then I learned this from Elvis Presley. I went and saw his show. We were opening up the following day and I came and saw his last show or his closing night. And he had the audience right in the palm of his hand. The band was going crazy. Ronnie Tutt on drums, the lights and everything. With the technology they had back then, it was the best. And the crowd was going crazy. King of rock and roll. That's why he deserves that role or that title. Following night, I'm with my brothers in his dressing room getting ready for the show. There's a knock on the door and opens up. There's Elvis. Hmm. And he says, hi, everybody, I'm Elvis. And I thought to myself, yeah, we know. And then he proceeded to just talk to us and just be the coolest guy. And, you know, and just he puts his pants on one leg at a time, just like everybody else. And I realized right then I think I was 15, maybe 14, something like that. I realized stardom is almost a facade. It's a necessary facade because people want to see a show. They want to see a star walk on stage. Mm. But the curtain comes down.
Yeah.
And we're all the same. Mm. And if you can keep those two dynamics in perspective, it's great. It's really difficult sometimes because you got to wear a star hat. Then you got to wear a dad hat, a husband hat, and you're constantly changing it. I've done that all my life. In fact, when I recorded this album, most of my albums that I've actually produced, I've learned how to juggle those dynamics because I'm a producer, but I'm also an artist at the same time that I'm recording and engineering my own recording. Mm. And it's difficult, but once you get that dynamic down, it's great. But it's the same principle as dealing with adoration and humility. Mm. Be grateful and then get to work.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Folks, I don't know if you're like me, but I can't wait to see Donnie when he starts up his show again. All the information on donnie.com. Harrah's, August 2021. Donnie, thank you so much for being with us. We sure appreciate
it. It's going to be so much fun. And one last thing about this show, and I've been working on this for a year, you guys, because technologically it's a nightmare. I started thinking, okay, what kind of show do I put on? I've got 90 minutes to do six decades of music. Yeah. And because who's going to come see the show? And if my social media has anything to do with it, it's every single age group. Because whether they know me from the Puppy Love era or the Masked Singer or Dancing with the Stars or Joseph, it doesn't matter. It's everyone. So I came up with a segment. I'm calling it the request segment. It's probably 10, 12 minutes long. All 63 albums are going to be on this huge, massive video wall behind me. And at any time, anyone in the audience can pick to an album. They see all the titles and say, Susie from Ohio sitting there. She says, I haven't heard that song since I was 13 years old. Oh, really? 3, 4. And we do it. Any song I've ever done in 63 albums, 63 years, I can do it at the drop of a hat.
Wow.
It's going to be so much fun. Epic.
Yeah.
How fun. Donnie, thank you again. We sure appreciate
good being with you.
Everything that you do for everybody. And thank you for being on the podcast with us. And thank you to our listeners. We'll be back again next week with another episode of Voices of Life.